brought to you by Penguin.
SAS Sea King Down by Mark Aston and Stuart Tootle. Read by Simon Darwin. Prologue. I felt my breathing heavy in my lungs and throat, my leg muscles aching with the effort of it as I pushed higher up towards the stony outcrop of shag rocks. It was harder back then, when we had been burdened by weapons and the heavy kit that we carried as we laboured through the dark, our feet stumbling over rocks and among the clumps of grass and heathery scrub. Now I was loaded with the weight of advancing years and the effects of a long flight across thousands of miles of the South Atlantic. The incessant wind blew hard in my face from across the empty sea in the west, just as it did before, although it was night time then, and a different season. The sun warmed the back of my neck, and I felt the first trickle of sweat as I crested the rocky bluff that stood proud from the rest of the coastline. The sea was a brilliant aqua blue below me down to my left, the sunlight sparkling off the gentle swell of the waves, no longer whipped by the fury of the storm we had faced that night. I caught my breath as I reached the top, and, looking inland, I saw it. The settlement lay a few miles off in the distance of the lower ground, its buildings discernible as a cluster of small white dots nestling among the dark smudges of gorse bushes, with the slight dash of an orange windsock just visible as it flapped in the breeze on its eastern edge. Beyond it lay the target. As I gazed across the open ground in front of me, taking in the marshy ponds and the mountains in the background, the detail of it all came flooding back to me as if it was yesterday. Keyed with frozen fingers, the Morse code message sent over high-frequency radio to the D Squadron 22 SAS operations room on board HMS Hermes was short and precise. 11. Repeat 11 aircraft believed to be real. Squadron attack tonight. Chapter 1. It all started with the knock on the door of my pad in Hereford on the 4th of April 1982. It was a Sunday evening. The signature tune from Dallas blared out from the TV set in the living room as I made my way into the small hallway of our married quarter to answer the unexpected caller. Phil Kuras, the troop sergeant of Mountain Troop, stood on the doorstep. "All right, Phil. What's up?" Phil and his family lived a few doors down on the pad's patch of tight-packed two-up, two-down houses, but something in his manner told me it wasn't a social call. "Sorry to bother you on a Sunday, mate. A Scale A has been called for the squadron, and everyone needs to be in camp for a briefing at 1000 hours tomorrow morning." "What's up?" I repeated. "I don't know," he replied, "but it's got to be something big, as the boys from G Squadron have been called in too." 34 years old, the quietly spoken, sandy-haired Midlander was a former medic from the Army's Medical Corps. Phil was also a decorated Special Forces veteran, and as the troop staffy of Mountain Troop, he ran the small subunit of 16 men with something of a bedside manner, which oozed confidence and a soothing balm of authority. But it didn't mean that he knew what the brief was about. His job was to make sure that we were there for it. The absence of any more information didn't concern me overly. I had been in 22 SAS for just over 2 years, and the regiment was always on permanent standby to provide a response to any brewing crisis. It usually came to nothing. We were used to being stood up at short notice, only to be stood down again just as quickly. However, Liz took a very different view. "What did Phil want?" she asked, with a trace of acid suspicion in her voice, as I shut the door and walked back into the living room. I told her about the briefing. "And of course, you will be going in." I resisted the temptation to say, "Of course I am fucking going in. I'm in the fucking SAS. I knew it wouldn't help the situation. Sensing my indignation.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?